health-related business matters are handled personally by a member of the Martin family, either Ross or his son Tom Martin. For personal preference at a funeral home, let the Martin Funeral Home handle everything. The Martin Funeral Home, located on Center Avenue in Butler.
Enjoy the sunshine today. A high just about 62, a low tonight down to 48. Rain very likely tomorrow. Well, at 100%, yeah, we're going to have some rain showers on Tuesday. A high near 56, a low down to 30. Then Wednesday, we'll drop it to a 30% chance of some wet weather. A high of 51, a low down to 35. And then back to sunshine on Thursday with a high near 56. We're at 61 right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios. Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. Dave's up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Hello there. Good afternoon. Welcome. Nice to have you with us. Monday edition of It's Your Turn. And what a day. Boy, have you been outside yet today? Even if it's just for 15 seconds, step out on the back porch or whatever. Look around. Take a couple of deep breaths. There's a taste of spring in the air. It's a little breezy. And the weather folks told us very early this morning, as a matter of fact, well before dawn, that it was going to get a little windy today. But my, they've just adjusted the anticipated high. They now say we may hit 65 today. So, well, we're in the low 60s already. It is really nice. And to top it all off, we've got sunshine and blue sky. How about that? Huh? Hard to beat. Hard to beat. Hey, we have lots of guests on the It's Your Turn program today. We love it when we have a day like that. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we're going to be talking by telephone with guest Ed Ruggiero. You may not be familiar with that name, or maybe you are. He is a well-known World War II historian, written a number of books on World War II history, and he's now branched out into historical fiction. Again, related to his area of expertise, World War II. So we'll be chatting with Ed Ruggiero in just a couple of minutes here, actually. Still later on the program today, several guests will join us, representing the Butler County Chamber of Commerce, including the president of the chamber, Stan Kosciuszko, along with Maria Malloy and Mindy Dinkerly. They are the two most recent honorees of the Chamber's Employee of the Year Award. So we'll talk about that coming up a little bit later on the program today. First of all, we're going to take a quick break, and then Ed Ruggiero joins us here on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. We'll be right back.
The deals at Tobacco for Less just keep getting better and better. Their stores now include a great loyalty program for valued customers that can help you save on your purchases. Each dollar spent at Tobacco for Less will earn a point. And once you hit 200 points, you can redeem $10 off any purchase of $25 or more. Stock up on their various tobacco products, explore the cigar selection in their walk-in humidor, or check out the great CBD products in their health and wellness department. For all your smoking and vaping needs, visit Tobacco for Less in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
Listeners, I've been looking forward to chatting with our next guest here on It's Your Turn for quite a while, since I found out that Ed Ruggiero was available. He's just published a new book. It's historical fiction. The title is Blame the Dead, and we'll talk about that. I also want to talk about a couple of earlier books that Ed has written. Ed, it's a pleasure to meet you. I'm so glad to be able to chat with you here today.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
You're in Philadelphia, I believe. Is that where I'm reaching you?
Yes, just outside of Philadelphia in the leafy burbs.
We are approaching the 75th anniversary of the end of World War II. In fact, in May of this year, we'll mark the end of hostilities in the European theater. It won't be until late summer that we have VJ Day. You have written extensively about World War II, and your latest book, Blame the Dead, is set in World War II. It starts out in Sicily, right?
Yeah, so I've written two nonfiction books, military history, about the 82nd Airborne Division in World War II. And the first of those is called Combat Jump, and it is about the Allied invasion of Sicily in 1943, the first time America used a large-scale airborne invasion to spearhead the landings. And so in the course of writing those two books, of course, I talked to lots and lots of veterans. At the time, this is a few years ago, and so I was immersed in that and immersed in the Sicily campaign, and so in Blame the Dead, all I've done is turned to historical fiction, it gave me a lot more latitude with stories that weren't going to make it into the nonfiction book, and but I was walking familiar ground, you could say, talking about the Sicily campaign.
Well, your central character in Blame the Dead is Eddie Harkins. Tell us a little bit about Eddie. Who was he?
So Eddie Harkins is a former Philadelphia beat cop who, like a lot of young men, right after Pearl Harbor, enlisted in the Army. Because he'd been a police officer, they put him in the military police corps, and thanks to some good scores on aptitude tests, they made him a junior officer. But he's never been a detective. What happens is he happens to be first on the scene at the murder of a U.S. Army surgeon in a field hospital. And because the provost marshal, which handles investigations, is shorthanded and things are moving very rapidly, he gets tasked with this, investigating this murder. But it turns out that the victim was not a very nice guy. He was accused of all sorts of nasty things, including harassment of the nurses. And everybody that Eddie talks to tells him, well, this guy got what he deserved. But once he starts digging, he realizes there's a lot more wrong in this command at the 11th Field Hospital. In spite of his inexperience as a detective, Eddie uncovers some interesting and frightening things. And then, of course, all the while in the background, the war is going on. The field hospitals are located just a few miles behind the front lines. So in the midst of this murder investigation, there's also the constant flow of wounded that have to be taken care of. And one of the things that I particularly enjoyed, I did a lot of research about U.S. Army nurses and medical people. So at the field hospital, I got to write a lot about strong women characters who made quite a contribution there. Not huge numbers, but they had an outsized positive impact for the wounded GIs. Writing about those women was a lot of fun.
One of the nurses that you feature prominently is Kathleen Donnelly. Tell us about her.
So Kathleen is a friend of Eddie's from the neighborhood. They grew up in Kensington in Philadelphia, which is where my parents are from. They quite unexpectedly run across one another. Even in an army of 8 million people, this could happen. People are moving about all the time. Kathleen becomes instrumental in helping Eddie uncover some of these things and guide him as well. One of the reviewers, it was interesting, said, you know, in World War II military fiction, historical fiction, because there were so few women near the front lines, often women are just ancillary characters, whereas Kathleen, I'm happy to say, was a major force in the investigation. And I really like Kathleen a lot. Enjoyed writing about her and hope that she comes back in one of the future books. I should also say Kathleen Donnelly is the name of my wife's great-aunt, and Eddie Harkins is actually the name of my great-grandfather, Bernard Edward Harkins. The fact that they're from the same part of Philadelphia that my family's from, so there are all these little connections like that as well that were kind of fun.
Nice touch. That's something you can do with historical fiction. That's great. What about the 11th Field Hospital? Was, in fact, there an 11th Field Hospital in Sicily?
There was, and in my author's note, I talk about the actual 11th Field Hospital, which first went ashore in North Africa in November of 1942. And something that I discovered that I didn't know, and boy, I've been reading military history probably since I could read, and of course I was in the military and was steeped in military history at West Point. But nurses of the 11th Field Hospital went ashore with the first waves in North Africa, climbed down those cargo nets, climbed into the little landing craft that were bobbing alongside, and dug their own foxholes on the beach. And that was something that wasn't repeated. Eisenhower apparently thought it wouldn't be good PR to find out that America's daughters at the time were going ashore with the first waves. But, of course, they had to operate. They started treating wounded right away. They only had the medical supplies that they could carry with them on their person. And so that was pretty dramatic. That had changed by Sicily. But these field hospitals, imagine a circus that can set up and break down very, very rapidly because they want to stay close to the front. Because, of course, the sooner a soldier is treated by medical professionals, the much better his chances of survival. So the idea is to get the soldier very quickly to the level of care that is needed. And they were just, so if you imagine a hospital and all the stuff that goes on in the hospital, and then add to that the fact that they're in temporary quarters and they have to be ready to move the entire operation on a few hours' notice, it was quite an accomplishment. And one of the things, and this struck me when I was writing the nonfiction books as well, is if you think about it, most of these millions of GIs, they're really amateurs at what they're doing, not in the medical profession, but in, as far as being in the Army and moving an entire hospital. They're kind of making it up as they go along, which says a lot to their energy and their selflessness. And I was always fascinated by that, that these amateurs are able to pull this off.
I've not read anything about the field hospitals in World War II, so this would be somewhat different from the MASH units that people may be familiar with from the Korean War some years later. Huh?
They're very similar. The difference in Korea is we had helicopters to evacuate wounded, which you could move wounded much more quickly, but the idea is the same. So a wounded soldier is treated right behind the battle lines at an aid station by medics and then moved back another level. And then a field hospital to an evac hospital, a field hospital, and then to an evac hospital. So there are different levels of care depending on the seriousness of the wound. But I used a book in my research called Battlefield Surgeon. It was written by a guy who served in Europe. He was a surgeon, and his son was the editor of this book. He kept copious notes, including drawings of some of the wounds that he treated, and also a couple of memoirs by nurses. So all of these informed my writing about the actions that are taking place at a field hospital. People who have seen the TV show MASH or the original movie MASH are going to be familiar with the concept for sure.
We're talking, if you've joined us a little bit late on It's Your Turn here on WISR today, I'm Dave Malarkey. That's fine. Ed Ruggiero is our guest. A little bit about Ed. He's a West Point graduate. He alluded to that a few minutes ago. West Point graduate, former Army officer. He has studied, practiced, and taught leadership for more than 25 years. His client list includes the FBI, the New York City Police Department, the CIA, and many others. He's appeared CNN, the History Channel, the Discovery Channel, CNBC, everywhere. And he's written also some nonfiction books about World War II. We'll talk about those a little bit later, but we're discussing right now his book of historical fiction, Blame the Dead. Is this your first book of historical fiction, by the way, Ed?
It is my first work of historical fiction. It's not my first novel. So my first five books were novels. My first one was published actually in 1990, but they were set in a modern setting, so current setting. This first historical fiction.
Most of what we've seen of women involved in World War II, most of what I've seen at least, concerns their work with, there were great code breakers, for example, outside of London. Was it Bletchley Park? Is that the name of the place where they had the big code breaking headquarters? They also did some other things. They ferried airplanes. You know, we were cranking out new aircraft like crazy here in the United States. Did people ever stop and wonder how we ever got them from the aircraft plants here in the U.S. To Europe? There were mostly women, right, that ferried those planes to Europe.
Absolutely. So women stepped up because, of course, the men in the workforce had been taken into the service. And where Rosie the Riveter is the iconic version of women working in factories, which in itself was unusual enough. But yeah, women ferried airplanes around, and they did work as code breakers, and they worked in signal intelligence, and of course in the medical profession, and just in general had to step up. Of course, Queen Elizabeth II served in the auxiliary services as a driver in Britain. Mm-hmm. So it was even more the case in Britain, closer to the front, of course, where women did that. And then women played a big role in the resistance movement in France. There's a terrific book by Lynn Olson called Madame Fourcade's War, where she talks about one of the most successful resistance networks in France, which ferried down Allied airmen out of France and into neutral Spain, was run by a woman, much to the surprise of the Gestapo when they finally did track her down. Mm-hmm. So, and much of the work that the women did, of course, was classified and didn't come out until much later. For instance, the code breakers. So they didn't really get the credit at the time.
We're talking with Ed Ruggiero. Most folks would be familiar with the D-Day invasion into Normandy. We had the 75th anniversary of that last June. But you may not know, listeners, if you've not studied World War II, that the Allies first invaded Italy and Sicily. And that's where Ed's novel is set, Blame the Dead in Sicily in 1943. This was the year before the D-Day invasion. But the U.S. used paratroopers as part of the invasion of Sicily in addition to storming the beaches, right?
Yeah, so Sicily was, and this is where I first became interested in this campaign. I met up at West Point, I met a man who graduated from West Point in 1941 and participated in that invasion of Sicily, and then the other invasions as well, the airborne invasions. And Sicily, especially for the airborne troops, just about everything that could go wrong did, and nevertheless, they got the job done, which is absolutely remarkable. So in this conversation, which took place in the bar at the Hotel Thayer there at West Point, I asked him, I said, well, sir, how do you build an organization that gets the job done in spite of everything going wrong? And his answer eventually became my book, Combat Jump, and it's a remarkable study of starting not only, this is a new technology for arriving at the battlefield, but a brand new organization, and you could argue a new culture even, of you got to get the job done, because of course paratroopers wind up scattered across the battlefield, so everybody has to own the mission. If you're a little group of paratroopers, if you're a private first class and everybody else is a private, well, you're now in charge. So they had to instill a sense of mission and dedication to the mission that was pretty remarkable and became fascinating. I've spoken to a number of audiences about that in my work in leadership, how you build an organization where people are dedicated to getting the job done, even when the plan falls apart.
Hmm. Folks, I have to get a quick break in here. We have a few more minutes that we're able to chat with Ed Ruggiero. I want to talk about a couple of his earlier nonfiction books. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be right back.
They have lived a lifetime caring for others, and the time has come for others to care for them. LifeStep Senior Day Program, a trusted provider for over 30 years, can help. LifeSteps provides a safe, medically monitored environment, providing meals and socialization. Seniors can keep their medical provider while retaining their property and offering respite to family members. Free trial visits are available. Call LifeSteps today at 724-283-1010 or visit lifesteps.net.
Goulis Transmissions, a name built on reliability, peace of mind, and most of all, exceptional transmission service. They service all makes and models. We're talking domestic and imports, cars and trucks. Located on Route 8 in Cranberry, Route 8 in Hampton, online at GoulisTransmissions.com.
Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey. It's the edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR, and Special guest visiting with us by telephone today from Philadelphia, where he makes his home, Ed Ruggiero. He's written a new book, historical novel, entitled Blame the Dead. I want to talk, Ed, about a couple of your earlier books. I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation that two of them have been on my bookshelf for quite some time, Combat Jump, which you mentioned, and also First Men In. And the reason that I bought them is because my dad was in the 82nd Airborne in World War II, jumped into Normandy, so I certainly wanted to read, especially First Men In. I'm assuming that you visited Normandy in the course of your research into First Men In, or maybe you just were able to interview paratrooper veterans.
I visited both Sicily and Normandy, walked the drop zones, looked at the intersections and bridges and causeways and little bitty towns where they fought. And of course, my business is that I take executive teams to those places, to Normandy as well as Gettysburg, and I use the history to talk about leadership. So I've been to Normandy, a number of times. Mm-hmm. And so I'm familiar with the ground. I think it helps, you know, to understand the place better and to get a feel for things if you want to convey that to readers. I guess it's not absolutely necessary, but it certainly helps me to have walked the ground. And then, of course, there's an emotional component to being on the spot that I can't get from looking at maps. So it was a tremendous opportunity for me to be able to go to those actual places. Sicily as well. And, of course, I had feedback directly from the paratroopers who fought there about where and when and how and what it looked like and what it looks like now. So all of those visits have been very helpful.
You concentrate for the most part on the 505th Regiment, as I recall, in First Men In. My dad was in the 508th, the 82nd Airborne, and that was one of the units that was horribly scattered, in some cases landing several miles from their planned drop zone, and that made things pretty difficult. I visited Normandy some years ago in the process of writing a history of my father's experiences, and he never knew exactly where he came down. He was far from his planned drop zone, which was supposed to be just a mile or two east of the town of St. Mary Glise, which I'm sure you're familiar with. But the road signs had all been removed by the Nazi troops, so there was really no way to tell where you were.
To imagine you're in a darkened landscape, you don't know where you are, you know you're not where you're supposed to be, you don't know where your buddies are, you can't find your equipment, you don't know where your leaders are, and then, you know, if you make a mistake and show up in some place you're not supposed to be, somebody's going to start shooting at you. So it had to be absolutely terrifying. So the fact that so many of these men nevertheless figured out all these things and continued with the mission is absolutely remarkable. But that that darkened landscape, that's can be pretty scary.
Well, I wandered around for a couple of days trying to find some landmarks that my dad might remember, and I went to all those little towns, Picauville and Amfreyville and Chef DuPont and even Orglandes, but no definitive answer. So we'll never know just exactly where he was.
No, and that kind of confusion, Clausewitz called it the fog of war. I mean, it happens at the higher levels, but it certainly happens down at the lower levels. A lot of the veterans that I talked to said it wasn't until years later when they read the history that they realized, this is how what I was doing fit into the larger picture, because of course the war is very personal, especially for privates on the front line. It's just, you know, you and the area that you can see around you. I had a fellow named Bob Murphy from Boston. He was an 18-year-old paratrooper when he jumped into Normandy, and he said that I could be sitting in my foxhole eating a meal, and you're a couple hundred yards away in a struggle for your life. We're going to have different ideas about what that day was like. And I thought that was a brilliant way to put it, because, you know, you get all these accounts, you know, say, well, what was it like? Well, here's what it was like for me in the 20 yards around me that I could see. But that doesn't, you know, that doesn't really tell you anything about the larger war with a capital W. So sorting through all those things, that's an historian's job, and try to make it to make it clear to people. And of course, historical fiction like Blame the Dead gave me a little more latitude to play with the facts to make those kinds of points clear.
Mm-hmm. Ed Ruggiero, our guest. By the way, if people want to read either of your two nonfiction books, I assume that First Man In and A Combat Jump are still in print, Ed, you know?
Well, they're still available online because, thanks to the Internet, you can get anything, anywhere, anytime.
Or maybe you've seen the Band of Brothers HBO series. Talked about, I was in 101st Airborne, not the 82nd, but still similar stories. 75 years past now. Wow. There are not too many of these World War II veterans still alive, Ed.
No, and so of the 100 or so veterans that I talked to, I don't think any of the guys that I got to know are still around. I kept in touch with many of them over the years, and sadly they passed. But for the most part, they were happy that they had been given decades of life past what their comrades had gotten, and were uniformly grateful for that. Many of these men had never spoken about their experiences until my interviews, and which then could be quite emotional for them. But a lot of the guys found it cathartic to talk about their experiences finally. There was some of these men were invited, for instance, at the 40th anniversary of D-Day to go talk in their local schools or things like that, and actually had resisted up to that point, but then once they did it, they realized, okay, well, this could help me. And of course, that generation, you know, they didn't talk much about their emotions, and they were just supposed to bottle everything up and carry on, which didn't work out great for many of them. Audie Murphy, the most decorated GI in World War II, was one of the first prominent figures to talk about what we would call PTSD. And because he was such a hero, it made it okay for other people to admit, well, yeah, I've had difficulties too. And I met a former paratrooper at a reunion that I attended, and he said for years after the war, he would go into bars and have a couple of drinks and pick out the biggest guy in the bar and start a fight and just routinely get beat every time. And he never connected it, or didn't initially connect that with his war experience and the anger that he carried. And it took him a while to figure that out. So it's good now that the younger generation has a little bit easier time. We can at least admit there is such a thing as post-traumatic stress.
One final question. I've got to let it go here, but you know, everybody knows that in war fiction, you know, it's battles of good and evil, and in this case, it would be you know, Americans versus the Nazis and the Italians. But many times, war fiction is oversimplified. There were battles going on within units, among allies, even among comrades, sharing a foxhole or a field hospital, and so that kind of comes out in your novel, Blame the Dead, right?
Yeah, it's simplistic to say that, you know, there were good guys and bad guys, because there were good guys and bad guys at every single level. You know, you're suddenly placed with people with whom you might not want to spend an hour of time if the Army enforced you to be with them. And, you know, if you're put in a situation, you have hundreds of thousands of terrified and powerless civilians and tens of thousands of young men armed to the teeth and sadly inured to the idea of using violence to get what they want. You know, things can go badly. I'm writing now actually about the Criminal Investigation Division and in World War II and the number of crimes that they had to investigate. You know, an army of 8 million, you're going to get some bad apples. And you know, so there are crimes committed by GIs and Allied soldiers against civilians, against other Allied soldiers. So it wasn't all perfect on the Allied side.
Blame the Dead is the launch of a new series called Victory in Europe. Are these more books by you, Ed, or by other authors?
No, these are mine. Eddie Harkins has continued adventures. The next book is called Comes the War. He's in London in April of 44, so on the eve of the invasion, when everything is coiled like a big spring ready to go, and everybody knows it's going to happen, but they don't know the exact date or the exact location, but there's all this pent-up energy in Britain as probably 1.5 million GIs waited for the big day.
Ed, a pleasure to talk to you today. Ed's novel, historical fiction, is called Blame the Dead. Ed Ruggiero, nice to have you with us, sir.
Thank you so much.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about prearrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Do you know an incredible kid? Don't we all? It could be the neighbor who always mows your grass or the youngster who collects food for the elderly at church. Maybe your incredible kid read 30 books over the summer, overcame a significant challenge, or started her own small business. Consider nominating your incredible kid in the Incredible Kid Contest, presented by the Butler Radio Network and American Natural. Every month, listeners can submit a photo and a brief profile story of what makes this nominee the perfect candidate for our Incredible Kid Contest. Each of the nominees must be 18 years of age or younger. Nominations will be accepted the first 2 weeks of each month, which will then be followed by 2 weeks of voting by you, our local listeners. The winner will be interviewed on the radio, recognized on the Incredible Kid Contest page, and receive lunch for two at American Natural. To learn more about submitting your incredible kid, go to butlerradio.com. As Albert Einstein once said, children are our most valuable resource. So let's recognize their successes and celebrate their accomplishments.
Welcome back, good friends. Real thrilled to be able to talk with a World War II historian like that, Ed Ruggiero, on the first portion of the program today. He was visiting with us by telephone from Philadelphia. Our next guests are here in the studio. Stan Kosciuszko is here, president of the Butler County Chamber of Commerce. Stan, always good to see you.
Nice to be back.
I'm glad that everybody made it. I was afraid there might be some people playing
because the weather's so
playing
nice.
Hooky today, yeah. You know, suddenly coming up with appendicitis or something like that.
And I don't golf. I was gonna call in for that gentleman you were interviewing to see if he has ever been to the Kosciuszko Museum in Philadelphia.
I don't know.
Yeah, there's a Kosciuszko Museum in Philadelphia.
Yeah, there's a Kosciuszko Society, right?
There is a foundation in New York City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Has to do with the, don't tell me
General.
Now, is it Polish history? Is that,
mm-hmm.
is that right?
Thaddeus Kosciuszko.
Yeah.
Revolutionary War. Built West Point.
Who knew we were going to get this sort of information? From an amateur historian like
From an
Stan.
Amateur historian. Anyway. An amateur everything. Good anyway,
good
moving right along.
We also have two other guests with us today. Mindy Dunkerley is on the board of the Leadership Butler County. Mindy, nice to have you here today.
Thank you very much.
And also Maria Malloy, who's a member of the Youth Leadership Board. Maria, same. Good to have you here, too.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And you are the two most recent honorees of the Chamber's Employee of the Month Award, right, Stan?
They are, yeah. Mindy won last year, so 2019, and Maria got to present it to her 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a coveted award.
And it will be awarded again very soon, right? It will
be awarded again in April 15th, mm-hmm. at the Employee Appreciation Luncheon, which is at the atrium. It starts at 11:30. It's a really nice luncheon.
How long has the Chamber been doing this?
The first year we did it was 2005, and I'm very proud it was my idea that we do that. Mm-hmm. And then immediately Butler Health System said, we want to sponsor that award for as long as you're doing it. So it actually is the Butler Health System, Butler County Employee of the Year Award that's presented by the Chamber of Commerce.
Well, it is quite an honor. And Mindy, you're a system improvement specialist at the hospital, is that right?
I'm actually the executive director of quality and performance at the hospital.
She got a promotion since I sent you that email.
Maria, you're an administrative assistant to a couple of the county commissioners.
That's correct. I am an administrative assistant to both commissioners Leslie Oshie and Kimberly Geyer.
Do you get paid double because you're an administrative assistant?
I do not, but that's a good idea.
Yeah, two of them. And
if they're listening out there.
The awardee this year won't be announced until the luncheon, is that right?
The awardee will be announced at the luncheon, yeah. We have quite a few nominations already.
Is there still room for the luncheon for tickets?
Oh, definitely there's room. You know, it's a month away. But the cutoff date is Friday the 13th, March 13th, for submitting the Employee of the Year nomination forms. And they can get that at the Chamber of Commerce or on our website. We can send it to them. But the voting body is all the past winners. So what we do is we send all the nomination forms to the past winners. And then let's say there are 10 nomination forms. They rate them 1 through 10. And the person who gets the lowest number, when they're all tallied, then that's the one that wins. Because everyone looks at something differently. You look at a nomination form differently. You know, community service might be important to you, or how they've impacted their job and their employees. That might be important to you. And the past recipients are from all over the place. Butler Eagle, Sunnyborn, Keystone Specialties, Sunnyview, Community Care Connections, BC3. It's every type of business has been represented in the past. So everybody looks at a nomination form differently. So
I want
to make a little announcement about Maria.
Yeah.
This has not even been announced yet publicly. But we had a resignation. One of our officers at the Chamber of Commerce resigned because she got a job in Armstrong County, a full-time job. So she resigned. So the board nominated Maria Malloy to step in as first vice chair. So at our next meeting, she will be performing her duty as the first vice chair of the Chamber of Commerce.
And I'm honored to do so, yes.
Excellent.
And I think it was nice that they considered her. I've been working with Maria since she did leadership, and she's on the youth leadership board. But it was nice that they said, yeah, we want her someday, hopefully, to be the chair of the board for the Chamber of Commerce. So I'm really proud.
Great. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. It was a really nice surprise.
Listen, let's talk a little bit about the youth leadership board on which you sit as a member.
Yes.
This doesn't meet quite as often as the regular leadership Butler County, but this is for young people who are still in school, right?
That's right. It is for 11th graders, and right now I believe we have every school district represented, and they meet four times during the school year for different sessions. We just met last week for the government session, where they got to meet with some elected officials, meet with a judge, and had a really good day there. They also have already had two sessions, so they'll have one more down at the Lemieux Center, where they love that day. They get to meet with some entrepreneurs in Butler, and then they will graduate, and it's really a great program. My daughter was fortunate enough to be chosen to do it last year, and really has learned in applying for colleges how she can use what she took from that leadership day and actually use it as a promotional tool for colleges to talk about her leadership skills that she learned.
So these students get like half a day off school for these four?
They actually take, it's an excused absence. Stan has worked with all the school districts and has the program approved. So it's an excused absence for full days. We normally start about 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, and it'll go till 2:30 or so. So it counts as their whole school day.
Well, that obviously shows what area superintendents think of this program. It's
right.
Pretty valuable, you know.
I agree with you. Now, Maria's class, Maria was in the Leadership Butler County class of 2017. And as you know, each class selects a project. They were in here talking about their kayak. Maria's class, although they received some project suggestions, they wanted to start a youth leadership program. They thought that was very valuable. A lot of the leadership participants have children in junior high school or high school, and they thought there's something new that's needed. Now, what her class did, which was very smart, is the first contact was with the superintendents. And they said, if you had four extra days or five extra days in your curriculum, what would you like the students to learn? So the superintendents actually designed that. Tracy Vitale at Seneca Valley was extremely important in assisting on that. So they designed the program that would be something that they would like to have, and the first session was team building. And so they do the physical challenge course at Slippery Rock. The second session was branding. How do you want to brand yourself? you know, with all the social networking and that type of thing. And the instructor actually looks at their phone and she says, is this what you want a college admissions person to look at? You want them to see this on your Facebook page. So it's very specific. They do an etiquette course. We take them to the country club and give them a complicated lunch with as many forks as we can find and knives and napkins and complicated foods, because they need to learn that etiquette could be an important part not only of your job interview but your career going forward. And then the session with the government officials is really eye-opening for the students, because they're a little more closely aligned to government studies, but they've not met the coroner, they have not met the sheriff, they have not met the drug dog, they have not met the commissioners. The commissioners come in and welcome them. And so the students are very, I guess, in awe of who comes to talk to them, the county treasurer, the judge. They can actually talk to these people, and they treat them like peers. So it's very impressive. Now, the last day, which is at the Lemieux Center, they get the chance to skate. And the last year when we were there, a couple of the Penguins were there getting some therapy, and they came through and talked to the kids. And now, we can't assure that the Penguins are going to be there, but you never know who you're going to run into. And it's just nice, and I liked your comment that the thing that is most rewarding for us at the Chamber of Commerce is that the program is extremely well respected and has been accepted by all districts, including North Catholic and Portersville Christian. So for them to say, yes, our students can take 4 days off because that's how important this program is, it's pretty heartwarming.
Do you take one student from each school or two, or does it vary from time to time? Right?
What we are trying to do is take a few from each school, and this is the first year we had all schools participating, so we were able to take from all of them, but we try to spread it out so that each school gets a few 11th graders to mm-hmm. participate.
And you don't want too many. I mean, you can't have 60 people.
Right. We try to cap it at around 30, and as it becomes more well received, we may have to start turning people away. We've been able at this point to take everyone that has applied, mm-hmm. but the number is going up each year.
I can see from what Stan was saying how it would be valuable. You were talking about your personal experience with your daughter,
yes,
getting ready to apply for colleges and think about career and that sort of thing. You know, this idea about branding. Right. Making sure that the right things are showing up on your social media record, because potential employees and college admission officers are looking at
absolutely.
That
absolutely, yes.
Well, I would never dreamed of doing that whenever we were going to school, except you, Stan. You're young enough that you probably had a Facebook record.
The computer I had in college was bigger than this whole building. Now, the other nice thing about the youth program is that BC3 and Slippery Rock signed on as 100% partners. So anyone who completes the program can get a scholarship to BC3, a $500 scholarship or a $1,000 scholarship if they're accepted at Slippery Rock.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. And this has all happened within a span of just, what, 2 or 3 years that the program's been in existence?
Right. I did the leadership Butler County in 2017, I believe, mm-hmm. and that's where we came up with this program, which is really modeled after the leadership Butler County. And I remember some of us saying at that time, wow, I wish we had had something like this in high school. Really makes you think about yourself and get to know yourself a little better so you can make informed choices about your future. And it sort of took off from there. We had Dan Sandler come in and do a training and sort of a personality assessment. And we sort of brought him in to do the same thing to the students so that they, I think it's eye-opening for them to, when they're choosing their career and choosing their colleges, to know themselves a little better so they know what direction they want to look in. And I think this program really helps with that.
Could be some real competition among students who would love to participate in this each year.
Yeah, the the application that Maria's class designed is interesting. It is probably 90% essay questions. We don't ask them for their GPA. We don't ask them for... Right. Are you in the Honor Society? That because we want students who are maybe not being reached by some other program. Mm-hmm. So I always found it interesting on the first day of school, there'll be maybe three students from Slippery Rock area, and they don't know each other. Mm-hmm. So it's not the same clique of students. The students from Butler District, they come in and it's like, oh, you're from Butler. Oh, I didn't. And so that's the nice thing. And then they develop friendships. For example, somebody from Seneca Valley might have the same interest as somebody from Mars. Mm-hmm. And so they become friends. Last year, for the first time, they had someone who is homeschooled. Mm-hmm. His mother had read about it in the newspaper, and she called and said, is my son eligible? Well, if you're going to be a junior, certified as a junior, yes, you can apply when you're a sophomore. And he thought it was fascinating mm-hmm. because he doesn't get to spend time with that many peer students. And his mother said it was really a good thing for him.
Students in regular public and private schools, to meet new students and be able to and learn to network.
Absolutely.
That's an important skill for later on in life, too.
I think it's also given them opportunities to go a little further, because I know last year our board, the Youth Leadership Board, was contacted by some members of Rotary. They have their own leadership program, and they were looking for candidates to send to this week-long program at Westminster. And they asked us to choose from students that we already had, knowing that they had gone through this process and would probably be really good to move on to another longer week-long session where they actually stay. And so we got to choose a couple students to go then to the Rotary program over the summer.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Leadership Butler County, which is a program that really served as kind of the model for this one for young people. And Mindy Dunkerley is on the board of Leadership Butler County. Similar, but first of all, quite a few more meetings, right, Mindy?
There are approximately 11 sessions that the adult professionals actually will attend all throughout Butler County, and then they end with a graduation ceremony in September at Slippery Rock University. Mm-hmm. They pick a project. So they'll solicit similar ideas, which is what Maria was talking about. Her class actually did this as their project. But they will solicit projects from nonprofits across Butler County, and then the class will vote on it, and then they work that entire year on getting the results for their project and fundraising and implementing.
Were you a member of a class in years gone by?
I was. I was fortunate to attend 2006 Leadership Butler County, and my class worked with the Berry Project, so the Butler County Emergency Relief Initiative is what my project worked on, and really getting that up and established. So our team divided into several different committees to fundraise and market and develop the application for assistance.
I remember that when that started. That was a particularly bitterly cold winter, and natural gas prices had skyrocketed, and there was a fear that people would,
And there had been the hurricane that moved through also.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of energy assistance that was needed. And the Ministerial Association had gotten together. Judge Horan was one of the leaders
Correct.
In that also. And they were just starting. And so Mindy's class decided, we'll come and help you with the marketing, with how somebody applies for assistance, how it's organized, bylaws. And then they actually did the last Bama auction. It was the 25th anniversary of the Bama auction, and that's what they used as the fundraiser to give money to the Berry mm-hmm. Project, which is still in existence now. It's still running.
So this year's class soon be nearing the end, I guess, of probably working on their project for the most part at this point.
Correct. They are working on their project. They're actually building a handicap ramp over at Marine.
Kayak launch at mm-hmm. Marine State Park. Mm-hmm. They just had a session Friday, which was very interesting. It was the first time the board decided to do a community and economic development day. It was a brand new day. And
were you able to talk to Mark Gordon or somebody like that from the con?
We had the whole session was hosted by Penn United at their facility and cabin in their training center, the Light Center. And the morning panel was Commissioner Geyer, Kim Geyer, who talked about, we wanted them all to talk about their backgrounds and how they got into whatever they got into. And Kim is by far one of the most exemplary speakers in Butler County. She is unbelievable. She did a beautiful presentation, and then she talked about the Airport Authority, and she was quite blunt about how she helped to advance the cause of the Airport Authority. Of course, Mark Gordon talked about the collaborative effort, And Joe Saylor gave an unbelievable presentation on what the Community Development Corporation does and how they would host a business and how they look for land and tax the breaks, that type of thing. So then they toured Penn United, the manufacturing facility, which they have not been able to get into a manufacturing facility before. And then the afternoon session was a panel of faith-based presenters, because the leadership board is very much convinced that the faith-based community, and they helped with Barry, faith-based community is extremely important to economic development. And the Chamber of Commerce, we don't just have 800 business owners that belong to the Chamber. We represent 80,000 employees who belong to various religions that have various social needs. So it's very important that we're sensitive to this. So the Reverend Tara Lynn from Calvary United, she set up the panel for the afternoon. And Dave, if I tell you, this was so interesting and on target, especially for what we're going through now in our society, it was exceptional. It was, the panel was so good that I think we're going to have the same panel back for a breakfast for the business community so that they hear how important the faith-based community is to economic development and also to the health and well-being of your employees. I mean, it was fascinating.
As a board member, I mean, do you get to sneak in and audit some of these things every once in a while?
We do. We do. The board members each try to sign up for at least one or two sessions to help facilitate. So, for example, Healthcare Day is coming up in April, so I help with Karen Dunn from the VA Medical Center, and her and I facilitate Healthcare Day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they'll tour the VA Medical Center. We go to Thompson Miller's crematory, and then we'll go to Butler Health System and tour the hospital and have Ken DeFurio do a talk with them as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll certainly be allowed to go to that one.
Yes, I will be at that one. But we can sign up throughout for any of the other sessions that we'd like if we're able to help facilitate. So they're about halfway through their sessions right now.
Sessions, yeah. Education Day will be next, and then we do Northern Butler and Southern Butler. Mm-hmm. And then their project, they're going to have the ribbon cutting at the regatta. Mm-hmm. I think August 2nd or August 3rd. Will be the ribbon cutting for their launch. But this class has been exceptional. I mean, every hurdle that I thought they were going to have, they have far surpassed that hurdle. They met with the state of Pennsylvania, with the Parks and Recreation, with the managers at Moraine, with the Moraine Preservation Fund, with the Regatta Committee. They've met with everyone and have made their suggestions, and basically everything has been approved. It's unbelievable. So it's going to be a good project.
And this, parallel to what I was talking about with Maria, employers in Butler County recognize the value of this because they give these selected employees, in effect, it's a day off so that they can go to these workshops several times a year. 10 or 12 times a year.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, one of the big things, if I can say, is the networking opportunities. I mean, you get to meet people that you wouldn't typically interact with on a day-to-day basis, you know, especially being in healthcare. You know, you get to interact with all of these different folks from different of the community and the different, you know, employers, and you're paired up with them on these different projects. You're learning different skill sets from different people. So it's pretty powerful.
Yeah. I asked Maria about serving two county commissioners, a little bit about her job. What you work in quality assurance at Butler Memorial Hospital?
Correct. So
and
we
what's that all about?
We work on all of the regulatory components for the hospital, as well as any of the quality initiatives. So, you know, there's a lot of value-based payments that are served to the healthcare agencies now, so you have to hit certain metrics. So there's a team of us that work together to make sure that we're hitting those metrics and we're getting the monies that we need, as well as making sure we're in compliance with any of the laws and ever-changing regulations out there.
I've seen some wire stories over the past couple of years that say that is one of the biggest headaches for healthcare providers in the United States these days, is making sure that all of your T's are crossed and your I's are dotted with regard to especially federal regulations.
Correct. I would have to agree.
She said with a tear in her eye.
I can say too much of our life is run by politicians and attorneys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the last person they're going to want to ask is your physician. when that's really the first person you should ask. You know, if somebody wants to know how Stan's doing, don't ask Highmark or don't ask UPMC. Ask my doctor that I've had for 35 years. Mm-hmm. If he says I need something, then he should know. And, you know, the hospital, they know how to run a hospital. They know how to take care of patients. You know, their patient satisfaction is very high. So why meddle in something where they know what they're doing? But so often people want to, you know, destroy something that's working well, or they have a better idea when they don't know what they're doing.
So. We've seen that at the state level, too, in education. Have over the past decade come out with a variety of plans to test, assess students' progress, and almost every one teachers have said this is not the way to do it, you know.
Yeah, and that's one of the things with the, on Education Day, we have a panel of superintendents, but also school board members. And the school board members will tell the class it's important that you get involved in your school district, in your, you know, whatever, transportation, municipality. But if you're getting involved in your school district because you don't like the janitor, then we'd prefer that you not be on the school board. If you're involved in your children's education and you're interested about their education, fine. But we have a superintendent. We have a principal. They're trained. They know what they're doing. So don't get on the school board to meddle. Get on the school board to enhance and to assist. So it's very interesting, but that same thing happens at every level.
We need to squeeze a break in here before we wrap up our conversation with our guests, so we'll pause for a moment and be back with more of the Monday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR right after these words.
When planning a funeral, should cremation be considered? That subject comes up a lot these days, and Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler can help to answer your many questions about cremation. Is it appropriate for your family? Should there be an actual funeral service, keeping in mind that it's a time to celebrate the meaningful life of your loved one? And of course, we look at the bottom line. What's the cost? Thompson Miller's cremation program offers three advantages: simplicity, convenience, and it's all performed locally here in Butler. We assure you that your loved one will never leave our care at any point in the process. Let's talk it over privately right here at Thompson Miller. We've been serving the Butler community for more than 90 years. A third generation of the same family is here for you. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706. Or online at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, because we care.
Hey, we just want to make sure as we wrap up our conversation here that, as Stan mentioned earlier, there are still plenty of tickets available for the Employee of the Year luncheon, right?
Correct, yeah, and it's on April 15th at the atrium, and you can check the chamber website, butlercountychamber.com, or call the chamber, 283-2222, and make a reservation. It's only $30. The theme this year is Breakfast at Tiffany's.
I was going to say, I saw the poster, and it looks pretty elegant.
Breakfast pretty elegant, yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, Sherry Lynn came up with that. The atrium sponsors it, and Medora's Catering sponsors all the food. So I tell them, since it's your baby, you do whatever you want. Let's have fun. And it always is really a nice lunch. Like, and then we have a lot of prizes.
You guys see the poster? It looks like Audrey Hepburn there.
Yes.
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
That's what they wanted. Yeah.
Very nice. And that's coming up April 15th. That'll be here before you know it. It's a month away for all intents and purposes.
And then the Leadership Murder Mystery is May 9th. And that's at the atrium. So if you want information on that, you can look at the Leadership Facebook page or the chamber website and get information on that one. That one always sells out. It sold out last year, 6 weeks before the event.
And so that helps to raise money for the
that will
the
help
kayak
to raise
launch.
Money for their kayak launch. And then they're doing a raffle also. They're actually raffling a kayak full of stuff, full of coolers and life jackets and or picnic table and the grill, all kind of stuff. The class is doing good. And I was telling Mindy is on the board of leadership. We have a meeting this Friday. But the class of 2021 is full already. So we have a wait list.
Doesn't surprise me. No.
It's nice. And it's nice to know that at some businesses, it's kind of competitive also. So let's say, for example, five employees will express an interest in being in the leadership program, and then the executives decide who they're going to send each year from that, and then waitlist somebody. Because we'll get somebody in leadership, and they'll say, Stan, you know, I've been trying to get into this course for 4 years. And I'll say, well, you don't know the right people. Wow. Which is a joke. But, you know, the presidents of the company and the hierarchy, they know who they want to send for which department is going to be needing that type of training.
Well, from the way Mindy described it, that's not surprising. Not surprising. Well, thanks for being here. And nobody fell asleep. We had a story this morning from the AAA that said, watch out for drowsy drivers today.
Well, because of
people who got
spring ahead.
Forward, yeah. One little hour.
That always amazes me. We lost 1 hour of sleep. Don't these people ever stay up late one night by accident?
See, I don't mind springing forward because you just hit the button and the hour advances once on the clock.
Very easy,
when
yeah.
you fall back, you have to go through the whole thing to change your clock.
And if you have a lot of old clocks, as I do, you know, takes a while.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. That's coming up. Huh?
It's coming there.
Yeah.
High holy days for us Irish people.
That's right.
Nice to have you all here.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Really, Maria. Maria Malloy and Mindy Dunkerley and Stan Kosciuszko. On tomorrow's program, we'll have guests from the Butler Little Theater's upcoming production, and Inspector Calls. It's a mystery, I guess. Inspector Calls, an English mystery. And we'll also be talking about problem gambling tomorrow. Amy Black Stockham will be with us. There are programs available actually from the state to help problem gamblers, because we got casinos all over the place these days. So all that's coming up on tomorrow's program. Hey,
every time they advertise the casinos, the state, they put, if you have a gambling problem, call this.
So what was the tagline at
come
the end?
Spend money and then get help.
Enjoy the spring like day today, folks, and hope to see you tomorrow at 12:30 for the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn.